Holding on to some Ches Amud Aleph, 13 lines from the top. My line begins late. Still in the middle of discussing the business about which machnos the various tmeim have to stay in and out of. So far, what we said was a mitzoda has to stay out of all three machnos, a zov, and the other ones light and a zov and the other ones in that category. Good morning, Ellie. A zov and the other ones in that category, as well as a balkeri, have to stay out of two machnos. We said, and a tummy mess or tummy mess or tummy sheretz only has to stay out of the one machna, the machna shchina. This, by the way, that we're saying over here. So we're saying over here. That the Balkeri is not allowed in that the Balkeri is not allowed in both machnos. The truth is, it's actually not so simple. Maybe there are Rishonim who learn that actually who have different Girsois in the Gemara over here and have Girsois that maybe he actually is. But okay. Anyway, continuing where we were up to. So again, 13 lines from the top of Samach Ches Amud Aleph. Toni Tana Kameh Rabbi Yitzchak Ba'Avdimi. When the Pasuk said, we've learned before a way how we knew that the Balkeri has to go out of two machnas is because we said, since the Pasuk says Kol Zov, so we said it means not only the Zov himself, but also anybody who's similar to a Zov in that the tumor comes out of his own body, as opposed to, we said, a Tmei Mes or a Tmei Sheretz, where even though in a certain sense their tumor is more severe, well, in the case of a Tmei Mes, the tumor is more severe because the tumor lasts for 7 days and he needs to be sprinkled with Paradrumal water, as opposed to Balkeri is not. But because the Pasuk says Kol Zov, then therefore we learn from not only the Zov himself, but also the Balkeri. So now we have a different source for the same din. Toni Tana Kameh Rav Yitzchak Ba'Avdimi. The Pasuk says about the Balkeri, the Yotze al Mechutz l'machne, he should go outside the machne, and the Pasuk there is talking about a Balkeri, Zu machne shchina, so that refers to machne shchina, and when it says lo yovei al teich machne, when it says he shouldn't come into the machne, Zu machne levia, then that means the machne levia. The Gemara is going to explain soon how we know it's not just an essay and a lois essay on the same thing. But anyway, so the Braisa says, Mikan la Balkeri, she yetzi chutz l'shtei machnes. From here we learn that a Balkeri has to be sent out of both machne shchina and machne levia. Meaning, in other words, the Pasuk in effect is saying that if he became Tomei in the Azara, then he has to go out of those both, that he has to go out of both of those machnes. But Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi tells him there's something wrong with the Loshen of the Braisa that you're quoting. Akati loy ayilte, you haven't even brought him into Machna Levia yet, apikte, and you're already saying he has to go out. In other words, you're saying loy yovei al teicha machna. So in other words, you're talking about he's outside Machna Levia, and you're telling him not to come in. But if we're talking about a person who was standing in Machna Shchina, the only way for him to get out of Machna Shchina is by passing through Machna Levia. In the Midbar, that's how it was. You had Machna Levia surrounded the Mishkan. In Yerushalayim also, it was the same kind of thing. Machna Levia, which is the Har HaBayis, surrounds the Azara. So there's no way to get from one without going through the other. So what are you telling me? If you're talking about, if the scenario that you're talking about is he's in the Azara, then how can you then what do you mean you're mentioning that he shouldn't go into Machna Levia? Of necessity, he has to go into Machna Levia in order to go out. So obviously you're talking about where he's standing outside Machna Levia, outside the Hanabayas, and being told don't go in. Well, in that case, then why are you first mentioning Zu Machna Shchina? How is he supposed to get into Machna Shchina anyway if he can't even go into Machna Levia? So you haven't even talked about bringing him in, and already you're talking about bringing him out. The Braisa seems backwards. Lishan Achrina, or another Loshan of what Rabbi Yitzchak Ba'Avdimi told him, the other way around, Akati Lo Yapikte, you haven't yet brought him out, Ayilte, and you're already describing how he's going in. In other words, same idea that you haven't yet, when you get to the Yotzah Mechutz LaMachna, Zumachna Shchina, you're telling him you haven't yet gotten to the point of telling him he has to leave Machna Levia. So how are you telling him already how are you talking already about him being inside there and then talking about that he has to leave Machna Shchina? So it amounts to the same thing. It's just two different ways of expressing the same thing. Ella, Ema, so rather what you have to say Say it the other way around, that when it says v'yotza mechutz l'machne refers to machne levia, when it says lo yovei al teicha machne zu machne shchina. So in other words, now we can understand the braisa a little bit better. We're talking about he's in machne levia to begin with, and what we're telling him is when you're leaving machne levia, don't think that you can leave it and you can go into machne shchina. No, you actually have to go in the other direction, go outside of both of them, and go into Machne Yisrael, into Yerushalayim. Rashi explains, in other words, if it didn't have the two expressions Hamachne, then we would have said that okay, it means only one Machne. It means if he's standing in Machne Shechina, then he has to go out of it. But if he's standing in Machne Levia, then he can stay where it is. So now that we have that, it says twice in the Pasuk Machne, as we're going to say in a second, then that shows that it means that he has to go out of two Machnes. So in other words, in short, he's not allowed to go into Machne Levia at all, and certainly not into Machne Shechina. Okay, Maskif LaRavina, but Ravina asks on that. Ema Aidi Va'aidi LaMachne Shechina, who says maybe both of those statements are referring only to Machne Shechina, only to the Azara. V'lava Ola Ba'ese V'loisese, and what the pasuk wants you to know is that if the Baal Keri goes into Machne Shechina, then he's over on an Esser and a Lois Esser. He's over on, there's an Esser v'yotza al-mechutz al-machna, that he's supposed to go out and he didn't. And he's over on lo yovei al-teicha machna, that he shouldn't come in. We have many mitzvahs. We have an Esser and a Lav. Why don't we say the same thing over here? The answer is, in Cain, if that's all the Pasuk meant, that if that's all the Pasuk meant, that that we're going, that... If that's all the pasuk meant, that it's going to be an essay and a lois essay for the one machne lemakro, then the pasuk could have said v'yotza mechutz l'machne v'lo yovei al toich. The pasuk didn't have to repeat the word hamachne again, because we know obviously once it says he should go out of the machne, where else? What do we mean? Where shouldn't he come into the machne? Obviously, so it didn't have to repeat that. So by repeating that, Hamachna Lomali, why does it have to repeat the word Hamachna? Shmamina Litzalai Matona Machna Acheres. Therefore, we learn from that it means that he has to stay out of another Machna. So not just Machna Shechina, but also Machna Levia. So he can't be anywhere in the Harabayas if he's a Baal Keri. Okay. So now turning to another point, the Mishnah had listed among the activities with the Korban Pesach that are Doicha Shabbos. We said one of them was Umichui Krov of Chula. We said the Michui of the Kishkis of the animal. Now we mentioned for contrast, we had Michui, and then on the other hand, we had Hadochas Krov of, which means washing them. So the washing, we said, is not Doicha Shabbos, because you can leave it until after Shabbos. But the Michui Kravav, we said, is necessary in order to prevent them from spoiling. So obviously, Michui means something less than completely cleaning them. So what is it? My Michui Kravav. Rav Huna Omer Shemen Nachvan Basakin. Rav Huna says, and part of the problem is also that the Shodesh Mocha has a lot of different meanings. It can mean to erase, it can mean to wipe, it can mean, and so on and so forth. So what does it mean over here? So Rav Huna Omer Shemen Nachvan Basakin. Rav Huna says it means that you pierce them with a knife, and that way the waste that's inside them is able to come out. The point is, if you don't, then it's going to spoil before Shabbos is over. So how does the word michui come to mean cutting it open in that case? So Rashi has two explanations. Number one, the word michui we can understand as being related to one of the meanings of the Shodesh Mocha means to dissolve. So therefore, it can refer to the waste that's dissolved inside the intestines of the animal. So you make a hole over there, and you make a hole, and it comes out. It pours out. It's easier to get it out that way. So you're making a hole for the purpose of getting out the dissolved substance, which would be one word, one meaning of michui. The other possibility is the Shodesh Mlacha can also mean to destroy, like timchas zecher amalek. So it means you make a hole in it, and like in a certain sense, you're destroying it. So same thing then. It means that you're doing that in order for the waste to come out. Rav Chiya bar Rav Omar, on the other hand, Chiya bar Rav says that no, it doesn't mean to get the actual waste out. It means shirka d'me'aya, means the mucus layer that's on the inside of the intestines. D'nafka agav duchka d'sakina, it comes out when you press on it with a knife. So therefore, according to that, the word michui means the word michui means something disgusting. So therefore, it means you're allowed to remove the disgusting stuff. Which, by the way, it means therefore that chiyah barab is more mekel than Rav Huna. Rav Huna is saying all you can do is get out the waste. You just make a hole in order for the waste to be able to come out, but that's it. Chiyah barab is allowing you to even not only take out the waste, but also to take out this mucus layer, which otherwise he figures that with that in there, still the intestines will spoil before Shabbos is over. So Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Elazar, really it's supposed to be. So Rabbi Elazar says, "My time in the Chiyah Barav." What Rav Huna's reason we can understand. We just said that the Shodesh Macha has a couple of meanings. One of them means dissolved substance, which describes the waste. The other one is that it means destroy, which describes when you make holes in the intestines with a knife. But where is Rabbi Elazar getting the idea that michui means to take out something disgusting, namely the mucus? Dichtiv, because the pasuk says v'chorves meichim gorim yechelu. The chorves, the wounds, meaning the wound houses of meichim, of the disgusting ones, gorim yechelu, the ones who live temporarily will take them over. So where the Gemara says, what does that pasuk mean, and what does that have to do with the michui over here? It means kidimatagrim Rabbi Yosef, as Rabbi Yosef teach the pasuk. You find it actually in Targum this is a pasuk from Yeshaya. You find it in Targum Yonason on the pasuk. The Gemara calls the Targum in many places by Rabbi Yosef's name because Rabbi Yosef was blind. He couldn't learn Torah Shabbachsav because Torah Shabbachsav has to be done from writing, and he didn't have that. So therefore, he specialized in the Targum, and therefore the Gemara often calls it by his name, even though he's not the one who wrote it. Anyway, so like he touched it, v'nichsehen derashi aya, the property of the rishoyim, tzadikaya yachsenun, the tzadikim will take it over. In other words, therefore, so what we're understanding is the word mechim over here then means the disgusting ones, which now ties in with what Chiyah Barav is saying about michui, meaning to take out the disgusting mucus that's in the intestines. So the chorvos, the wounds, the wound buildings that were left behind by the rishoyim, by the mechim, by the disgusting rishoyim, gorim, the ones who live in our world temporarily, meaning that tzaddikim, who have the mentality that they're not living in the world forever, they're only here for a period of time, and in general, also the Jewish people who've been living for many years in the world as if we're just strangers, you know, never in one place permanently for very long, yachsenun, they will inherit it. So yechelu, they will consume it. In other words, yachsenun, they will inherit it. So we see that the word mechim means disgusting ones. Marsha actually says a little bit different. Another meaning of the word mechim, which we find in a number of places in Psukim, for example, in Tilim, oilus mechim alaloch, the word mechim means fat ones. So therefore, it's an appropriate name for the Rishoyim, who fatten themselves up on things that they take from other people. And he also was saying that the word michui krova means to take out this fatty mucus-like stuff from inside the intestines. Okay. Yeah, well, no, because we're talking about a korban over here. Ultimately, they have to be eaten, otherwise they're noiser. So you still want to make sure before Shabbos is over that they're going to be clean enough that if they wanted to eat them, they'd be able to without them being spoiled. If people don't want to eat them, then okay, what can you do? All right. So now that the Gemara, now that we explain the second, now that's the second half, this v'chorvas meichim gorim yechelu is the second half of a pasuk. So now the Gemara is going to talk about the first half of the pasuk. The pasuk says, v'ro chvasim kedavram, the sheep will pasture kedavram, the sheep representing the Jewish people. We have in a lot of places in Tanakh where the Jewish people are compared to sheep and the Eibishter is compared to the shepherd. So what does it mean, v'ro chvasim kedavram? But let's focus on the word kedavram. What does that mean? Omer Menashe by Yumi, Omer Rav, kimedubar bum. Means that the Jewish people will graze and pasture and then be comfortable, like was told to them, like was said to them, kedavram, meloshen dibur. Mefoshim on the pasuk explained the word kedavram. It means according to the usual way. One meaning of the Shodesh Dover means like leading a person or leading an animal or whatever in a certain way. But here the Gemara wants to darshan it, meloshen dibur, meloshen speaking. Okay, so my kimedubar bum. So what do we mean? What specific promise from the Navi Are we saying, or are we referring to Amar Abayas? Abayas says what it says in the end of the pasuk: "V'chorvus meichim gorim yechelu." This that we just said, that the tzaddikim will end up taking over the nechassim of the rishayim. So now the whole pasuk is going that the sheep, meaning the Jewish people, will graze, will be comfortable, as was told to them by the Navi, that they will take over the property of the rishayim. But Amalei Rava says you can't understand the pasuk that way. Bishlema iksiv chorvos. If the second half of the pasuk didn't begin with a vav, if it said chorvos mechim, then you would say kidka amrit. Then it would be like what you're saying. The first half of it would be as if after the first half of the pasuk there was a colon, and now you have after that it's explaining. The second half of the pasuk is explaining how are they going to be kedavram, namely chorvos mechim gorim yechelu. But hashtag ksiv v'chorvos, but since the pasuk says and the chorvos, so that means milta achriti ka'amar, it must be that we're talking about something else. So these are two unrelated things. So the v'ro kvasim kedavram has to be referring to a different promise that the Nevi'im brought us from the Eibishter. What is it? Ella Amar Rava. So rather, Rava says Kidurav Chananel Amar Rav. Rather, we can say the promise that it's referring to in the first half of the pasuk is like what Rav Chananel explained in the name of Rav about a different promise that the Eibishter made for La'asid Lavi. The Amar of Chananel Amar Rav Asidin Sadikim Sheyichayu as Amesim. In the future, the tzaddikim will be able to be mechayim mesim. And where do we? How do we get that from this? From these words, v'ro kvasim kedavram. So we have like this: ksiv hacha v'ro kvasim kedavram. Now we have here a pasuk that the sheep will graze v'ro. Uchtiv hasem. You have a different pasuk in the Navi Micha: yiru boshen v'gilad kimei olam. Boshen and gilad will graze like they always did. Now pashat apshat means boshen and gilad are very fertile. Are areas, are very grassy areas. That's why Bnei Reuven and Bnei Gad wanted them for their cattle. So the simple meaning of the pasuk would just mean, in other words, that the same way as it used to be that Jews live there and graze their cattle, that's how it'll be lost in lovely. But in particular, the psukim around that in Micha are talking about nisim that'll happen, la'asid lavai. The next pasuk after that pasuk yiru boshen v'gilad kimei olam is pasuk yud dalad of perek zayin of Micha. The next pasuk tesvav is kimei tzeis chameretz mitzrayim aronu nuflois. So we're not stam talking about people being able to graze their sheep in these places. There has to be a deeper meaning. So we have to understand, what does the word boshan and gilad mean? Boshan, ze Elisha habamina boshan. The word boshan in this pasuk refers to Elisha, who originally came from boshan. And we know that in turn by putting together a couple of psukim. Shenem of a yanai v'shofat b'boshan. In Divrei Hayomim, when it lists the major families of Shevet Gad, it mentions Yanai and Shofat, who lived in Boshan, which was the area where Shevet Gad lived. So it mentions this family of Shofat. Uchtiv, and you have a different pasuk. Poi Elisha ben Shofat asher yotzak ma'im ayde Eliyahu. During that war involving the king of Yisrael and of Yehuda and of Edom that we talked about the other day, when Elisha got angry. So the pasuk says a few pasukim earlier, it says that they said, here is Elisha ben Shofat who poured water on the hands of Eliyahu, meaning that he was meshamish tamar chacham. He learned and served under Eliyahu, and therefore we can ask him for a nevuah and for a bracha for water. The point is, in other words, he's called Elisha ben Shofat. So the Gemara is connecting that with the Shofat who lived in Boshan. So therefore, we see that Elisha came from Boshan. Nowadays the Boshan is more or less what's called the Golan Heights. The Gilad is nowadays in Jordan. Boshan is at least part of it is in what's now the Golan Heights. Part of it is in Syria. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a good land. Yeah, yeah. Gilad Zeliyo. Then when the pasuk mentions Gilad, that refers to Eliyo. Shenema vayomer Eliyo atish b'miteshav v'Gilad. Remember, when Eliyo is first introduced, he's introduced as one of the residents of Gilad. So now putting all this together, we have like this. Therefore, so the Navi Micha is telling us that Yiru Boshan Vigilad Kimei Olam, that there's going to be something special that they, the rest of the tzaddikim among the Jewish people, are going to be like Boshan and Gilad in old times, namely where Boshan and Gilad, Elisha and Eliyahu, were both Mechayim Mesim, Elisha with the Ben Ashunamis, Eliyahu with the Ben Atzophasis, they were both Mechayim Mesim. So now when the pasuk is telling us v'ro kvasim kedavram, that the sheep, meaning the tzaddikim of the Jewish people, will v'ro like they were told, that means that tzaddikim in the times of Mashiach will have that power as well to be Mechayim Mesim. Marsha points out, by the way, why are we hinting at Eliyahu and Elisha by the names of the places they came from, why not just say straight out Elisha and Eliyahu? Why call them Boshan and Gilad? So he says, very interesting idea. We know that the Mesim who live in Eretz Yisrael, who lived and then passed away and are buried in Eretz Yisrael proper, are going to have an easy Trias Mesim, whereas the ones from outside Eretz Yisrael are going to have to roll through tunnels over there or whatever. So therefore, we're stressing over here Boshan and Gilad. Even though those are outside Eretz Yisrael proper, nevertheless, the Mesim who live in those places will have the schus of Trias Mesim through Tzadikim of the caliber of Eliyahu and Elisha. Also, love everybody's going to have Tchias HaMesim, but you do have an idea that it says that there are certain people who will have Tchias HaMesim first. So then the idea can be that in that time, then the Tzaddikim will already have that power. Yeah. Maybe also what the Gemara means is you might have some people where, in principle, maybe they shouldn't deserve Tchias HaMesim. For example, in Sanhedrin, right, you have people who denied Tchias HaMesim or said it's Einei Min HaTorah or whatever. Maybe the Gemara is saying that nevertheless, the Tzaddikim will have the ability to overcome that and get them Tchias HaMesim anyway. Amr of Shmuel ben Nachmeni, Amr of Yonason. So now Rav Shmuel ben Nachmeni says in the name of Rav Yonason, we have a different way of learning that the tzaddikim in the future will be able to be mechay mesim. Asidim tzaddikim sheichayu mesim. Shenema, you have a different nevuah in the Navi Zechariah, says, Oid yeshvu zekenim uzkenes berchoves Yerushalayim. Old men and women will yet in the future sit in the streets of Yerushalayim. V'ish mishante biyodei merev yamim. Each person will have his staff, his walking stick, in his hand because they're so old. Now, what's the point of the walking stick? First of all, Maharsha points out, if they're sitting, they don't need a walking stick anyway. And second of all, why first it's saying Zkenim was Zkenois, so why all of a sudden is it mentioning in the singular, the Ish Mishantoi? It should say Mishanoisam Biyadam or something. So therefore, we can douse in that the stick we're talking about over here is a special stick. When Elisha wanted to be Mechayim Mesim, the Ben Ashunamis, so he sends Gehazi with a staff and tells him put the staff on the baby on the boy's face and he'll have Tchias Mesim. In the event that didn't happen because Gehazi messed up, because instead he's going and telling everybody on the way, etc. But the principle was that Elisha's staff had the ability to be Mechaya Mason. No, there wasn't water on the way. No. The point is, in other words, no, what is water? No. The point is the Elisha had told him that if anybody speaks to you, don't answer them. If anybody greets you, don't answer them, etc. And he didn't do that. The Medrash says that actually where as he's going along, he's talking to everybody he sees and then even making fun. Ha, my Rebbe sent me with the stick to be Mechaya Mesim. So of course, by the time he brought it there, nothing's doing. But the point is, the principle was sound though that Elisha's stick has the ability to be Mechaya Mesim. So if now we're saying in the Nevuah that in the future of the Ishmish Antebi Yadoi, we're talking about that kind of stick that is able to be Mechaya Mesim. So we see again that we're saying that they'll have the power to do that. Okay. All right. In this connection, the Gemara points out, Ula Romi, Ula pointed out a contradiction between two psukim. Ksiv Bilam Mavas Lanetzach. You have a pasuk that says that Limoisa Mashiach, the Malach HaMavas, will be swallowed up and won't have any effect anymore. Uchtiv Kianar Ben Meir Shana Yomos. On the other hand, a different pasuk says that a young man will die as 100 years old. In other words, what's going to happen is if Limoisa Mashiach, people will live so long that if a person dies at 100, people will baklogzich, people will mourn over him. Look at how he died so young, he was only 100. So you see that people will die. The answer is like Kasha, Kan Bisro, Kan Ba'akum. One's talking about the Jews, one's talking about the Goyim. So the Jews will live forever, Bila Amavas Lanetzach. The Goyim will live much longer than they do now, but still they will eventually die. So the question is, we're talking Limoisa Mashiach, we're talking L'Asid Lovei. What are the Goyim doing there in the first place? Why are they sharing in the good times of L'Asid Lovei? The answer is Dichtiv, because the Pasuk says, V'omdu Zorim V'ro Utsayinchem, strangers will stand and pasture your sheep. Uvnei Necho Ikarechem V'Karmechem, the people from foreign nations will be your plowmen and the ones who take care of your vines. So in other words, there's going to be work that needs to be done. There's going to be agricultural and whatever work that needs to be done. L'asid lavei, we're going to be learning Torah. Lo ye esek kol ha'olam el ladas Hashem bilvad, as the Rambam writes. So somebody has to keep things running. So that's going to be goyim who are going to volunteer to do that. So therefore, there are going to be goyim then, and those goyim are going to be on a higher level. So therefore, they'll live longer, but they're still not the Jewish people, and therefore, they're not going to live forever. So we're talking about Bepashtus, we're talking about the good goyim, in other words, the ones who are the chassidim asolim, the ones who are volunteering to help, that they're going to do the gashmiyistic work while we can fartifzich in Torah. But so they'll have it's still going to be the world of Mashiach. They'll be much better off than they are now, but they're still subject to teva ultimately, and therefore yeah. So in this connection also, Rav Chista Rami, Rav Chista pointed out a contradiction between Pesukim. Ksiv v'chofra levono v'osha achama. One pasuk says about Yemos HaMashiach that the moon will be ashamed and the sun will be embarrassed, meaning that they're not going to shine at all. Or in a different place, I think, in a different place, it actually explains, means they'll shine, but like very dimly. Uchtiv v'hoya ur halavono ka'ur achama. But a different pasuk says, also in Yeshaya, says, the light of the moon will be like the light of the sun is now. The light of the sun will be 7 times 7, which is 49 times as intense. And like the light of the 7 days, which means, in other words, Rashi says, you consider the amount of energy, the amount of light that comes out of the sun in 7 days. Now multiply that by 49, shivasayim, means 7 times 7. And all of that is going to be in 1 day. So the sun's light and the sun's light and energy is going to be 343 times more intense than it is now. You have the famous thing that it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be motzi chama minautika, will take the sun out of its sheath, and the Rishayim will be burnt up, and the Tzaddikim will benefit from it. So in other words, so what are we talking about? So is it that the moon and the sun won't be shining b'chlal l'mos HaMashiach, or that they'll be shining only very dimly, or is it on the contrary, because they'll be eclipsed by the light of the Shekhinah, or are we saying that they're going to be shining even more brightly than they are now? So the answer is like Kasha, kan la olam haba, kan li mosa Mashiach. One's talking about olam haba, one's talking about the time of Mashiach. So in the time of Mashiach, the sun and the moon will shine brighter than they are now. Olam haba, they won't exist at all. All that's going to be is the light of the Shekhinah. Now what is olam haba in this context? So you have the famous machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban on this, where the Rambam holds that olam haba means the world of neshamas. So he says it refers to what we talk, when we talk about now, after 120, a person goes to olam haba. He says that's what we're referring to over here. Then he says what's going to happen, limos HaMashiach, is there's going to be tchias amesim, there's going to be yemos HaMashiach, all the good times that we talk about in Nevi'im and in Gemaras in various places. Eventually, though, even those people are going to die, and then they're going to have olam haba, the world of neshamas. So there's going to be a point when there's a world of only neshamas. That's how the Rambam learns. The Beis Hamikdash gets built during Yemos HaMashiach. But the Ramban disagrees with that. The Ramban disagrees with that. He says that no, yes, olam haba means Gan Eden, where neshamas go now, but it also means that after Tchias HaMesim and after Yemos HaMashiach, the bodies are going to stay, the neshamas are going to stay in bodies, the bodies themselves are going to be on a much higher level than they are now. So there's not going to be a time when they have to die and there's only a world of neshamas. In Chassidus, it talks about in many places, like the Ramban's Shita. So therefore, so you have those Yemos HaMashiach, there's the first stage where the Tzchias HaMesim, the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, Shibud Golias ends, et cetera, and then Olam Haba is within that. You don't have where the Neshamas have to leave the bodies, the Neshamas stay in the bodies, but you have a tremendous Gilu Shechina that you don't have now with Neshamas in bodies. And Chassidus talks about that the Ramban's explanation of it is the correct one.
How can the Rambam say that Mashiach time will be a zman of neshamas in one place, and in another place he says we don't know exactly what's going to happen at the time
of
Mashiach?
How can the Rambam say? What the Rambam says is like this. He says, as far as the procedure, how it's going to happen, how exactly Mashiach is going to come, like what the order of things is, whether Eliyahu is going to come before Mashiach or after him, for example, he says we don't know those details. But in a general way, he talks about in Hilchos Teshuvah and in Hilchos Malachim and in some other places, he talks about, again, you have, for example, you have a Gemara in Brachas that says that Olam Haba, there's no eating and drinking in it, and so on and so forth. Tzaddikim sit over there and enjoy the Ziv Hashchina. So he understands that, therefore, that there has to come a point. So he understands, therefore, that Yemos HaMashiach, Neshamas in bodies, is not the ultimate Tzchar, because there has to come a point when there is Ein Bo Lo Yachil Lo Shsiya, and we're just living off Ziv Hashchina. So therefore, he understands that it means that there has to come a point when there's when there's neshamas without bodies after Yemos HaMashiach. So yeah, he's saying that you don't know the details.
One second.
So he's saying we don't know the details means we don't know the details of what the procedure is going to be, what the process is going to be, how Mashiach is going to come. But after he comes, yeah, we can talk in a general way about how this order of things is going to be.
But he says clearly in one place, we don't know what's going to happen. In another place,
no, he says clearly in one place, we don't know how it's going to have the process that's going to lead to Mashiach coming. For example, Eliyahu coming before or after it, we don't know that level of detail. That's not the same thing as saying we don't know what's going to happen after that. Not the same thing at all. Okay, let's go on.
What's the difference?
The difference, what do you mean? What's the difference? One is before Mashiach comes and one is after Mashiach comes. He's saying, as far as what happens before Mashiach comes, whether Eliyahu comes first or Mashiach comes first, for example, we don't know. But what we can talk about, we know based on the Psukim and based on the Gemaras or based on his analysis of the relevant Gemaras, that it means there's going to be this certain order. There's going to be Yemos HaMashiach, and then later on after that, there's going to be a world of neshamas only without bodies. So the question, so anyway, the Gemara over here, and in fact, the Ramban uses this Gemara as one of the proofs against the Rambam that we see over here, if Olam Abba means a world of only neshamas, it means the world of neshamas that exists now, then of course there's no sun and moon, and it's a ruchniistic world. Only if you talk about that La'asid Lavai, there is a time after Yemos HaMashiach when there still exists a Gashmiistic world and we live as neshamas in bodies, but with a much higher level of Gilui Elokus, then it makes sense to talk about at that point there's no, the physical sun and moon don't need to shine even though the physical world still exists. Okay, so the question is, what about according to Shmuel's Shita, that the whole difference between nowadays and Yemos HaMashiach is only that we won't be subjugated by the Goyim? So according to him, there's no particular changes in Teva in Mashiach's times. And in fact, the Rambam learns like that. The Rambam learns that the Rambam writes, like Shmuel, so people will still be born, people will still die, the moon and the sun will still be exactly as they are now, etc., etc. So according to the Rambam, according to Shmuel, rather, my Ikalamemar, then how do you reconcile these psukim that one says the sun and the moon will shine, won't shine at all, or will shine only very dimly, and another one says they'll shine much more intensely than they do now? So he would say, both of them are talking in Olam Abba. You have the camp, the area of the Shekhinah, where there the sun and the moon won't shine at all because they'll be eclipsed by the brightness of the Ziva Shekhinah. And then you have in Machnet Tzadikim, which is a bit of a lower level, not quite as close to Elokus. So there's going to be a sun and a moon, and they'll shine more brightly. Gilui Nashas over here refers to a Yalkut Shimoni on a Pasuk in Tilim that mentions that there are seven different levels of closeness to the Eibishter, La'asid Lavai. So you have, there's one level, which is Machne Shekhinah, and then you have the next lower level is Machne Tzadikin. Okay. I mean, we have, you know, keep in mind, of course, even though it's only one level away, it's like, you know, when we talk in Chassidus about the difference between Atzilus and Bria, or between Yetzirah and Asiyah, you know, it's not just one level away. It's a quantum jump. It's a whole different kind of Metzius. So yeah. Okay. Rava pointed out another contradiction in Psukim. Ksiv, you have at the end of the Shira of Hazinu, Ani Omis Vachaya, the Eibishter says, I kill and I make alive. And then it continues, Uchtiv, and the same pasuk continues, Machatzti Vani Erpa. I wound and I'm the one who heals. So the contradiction is, why does it need to mention that second one? Hashta achuye mechaye. If the Eibishter is telling us that he can bring the dead alive, Mirape lekoshken, how much more so he can heal them? So why even bother mentioning? Why even bother mentioning the second one? Ella, Omar, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Masha, Ani Memis, Ani Mechaya. What it means is the Eibishter is saying like this. When I say that I kill and I make alive, don't think it means, okay, some people die and then other people are born, which is the derech of the world. No, what it means is the same ones that I killed are the same ones that I'm going to bring alive. Just like the same ones that I wound are the same ones who get healed. Obviously, you can't say a person can't be healed unless they were first wounded. So therefore, they're putting them together. And the Pasuk is teaching us that the same way as those refer to the same person, the same way that Ani Omis Vachaya also refers to the same person. So in other words, it's talking about Tchitz HaMesin. So in fact, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, saying just that. And when the Pasuk says, Ani omis v'chaya, when the Ebeshe says, I kill and I make alive, yochol misa be'echad v'chayim be'echad k'derech sha'olam noyeg, you would think it just means, okay, some people are die, some people are born, the same way as the world has always worked. Note, Tamad loyma machatz divani erpa, therefore the Pasuk continues, I wound and I heal. So ma mako refor be'echad, just like wounding and healing obviously refer to the same person, because a person can't be healed unless they were first wounded. Af misa v'chayim be'echad, the same way, the death and the life that we're talking about are in one person. Mikan shuva la'omrim en t'chias ha'mesim in HaTorah. Here is a refutation of those who would claim that t'chias ha'mesim is not in the Torah, because you see, this Pasuk can't be understood any other way unless you realize it refers to t'chias ha'mesim. Davar Acher, another explanation, another way of understanding why it puts them in that order. So why doesn't it put them in the opposite order? I wound and I heal, I kill and I make alive. Because Batchila Mashani Memis Ani Mechaya, the Ebeshter is saying, first the ones who I killed, I'm going to bring alive, Batchesimesim, Vahodar, and after that, Mashamachatzi, Vanierpa, after that, the ones that I wounded, I will heal. Because as we know, the Mesim are going to first rise up in Tchesimesim with all the mumim and with all the physical defects and problems that they had when they were alive, then the Eibishter will heal them. So therefore, so it's in that order. First Almas and Vachaya, and then Machatzi, while they were alive, I struck them with various illnesses and whatever, and now Vanierpa. Why Taka is it that way? Why doesn't the Eibishter, as long as the Eibishter is reconstituting the body, why not to begin with reconstitute it healthy? The Medrash says on it, because you don't want people to claim these are other people. You want them to be able to recognize these are the very same people who died. And then after that, they'll see a further ness of how those people are then healed. That's the point. In other words, you have, let's say, for example, you know that before a certain person passed away, he was missing an arm. So now when if he comes back to begin with two arms, that you could have some people are going to claim, oh, it's not Tchias HaMesim. It's a different person who happens to look the same. Like this, if he comes back with a missing arm and then it grows back, then they realize then there's nothing that they can deny. Unless over an S, yeah. Okay. The Mishnah continued, v'hekter chalava v'chola. Another thing of the Korban Pesach, which we say you do even on Shabbos, is burning the fats of the Korban. So Tanya Omer of Shimon, Boyer E Kam Chaviva Mitzvah B'Shaita, come see from this how precious is a mitzvah when it's done in its right time. After all, in principle, you could burn all these fats and limbs of various korbanos that need to be burned, and pedorim, the peder is also a sheet of fat that's draped over the head of the animal, whatever it is. All of that is kshedim kol alayla. It could be done all night, so they could, in principle, wait until after Shabbos. The ein mamtinin lehem ad shetechshach. But still, we don't do that. We wait. We do it right away. We don't wait for them till it gets dark. We do it right away there on Shabbos afternoon, showing that chaviva mitzvah b'shaita. Now, I mean, this chaviva mitzvah b'shaita doesn't apply across the board, of course. I mean, if we weren't doicha Shabbos for the Korban Pesach, we wouldn't say chaviva mitzvah b'shaita. But once we're ready doicha Shabbos for the shechting of the Korban Pesach, then we can do this as well, rather than waiting till Motzei Shabbos, given that it is, after all, something directly with the Korban, and it is tzorech gavoya, it is something needed for the mizbeach, for the kodshim part of it. That we said in the Mishnah, for example, that let's say the roasting of it is not doicha Shabbos, because that's not tzorech gavoya anymore. That's tzorech head yet. You need to be able to eat the meat, and you need to eat it roasted. So that's not Doicha Shabbos, but we're talking about the parts that go on the Mizbeach, right? A couple of sheets of fat from the inside of the animal, the kidneys, the tail, if it's a sheep, etc. Yeah. The Aliyah, yeah. Then we said in the Mishnah how kavose v'ava osei chula. Now, then we listed in the Mishnah a few different things regarding the Korban Pesach that are not doicha Shabbos, even though they're only also drabanan. So we mentioned, for example, carrying it on his shoulder. So even if we say chai noitzei etzatzmoi, that a living creature helps carry itself, so therefore it's not a melacha d'oraisa, or bringing it from outside the tchum, which is also only drabanan. Another example we mentioned was cutting off a wart. Which is a wart would be a mum, so you need to cut it off. Now we're talking about not cutting it off with a keli; we're talking about taking it off with his hands or biting it off or whatever. So that would be also dirabanan, because the shinui. Nevertheless, we're still saying that it's not doicha Shabbos, because again, these are things that could have been done before Shabbos. Or even if we talked about the other day, what happens if the wart actually grew on Shabbos? Nevertheless, we would still say that it's the kind of thing that can be done before Shabbos. So the concept of taking off warts from the animal can be done before Shabbos. Therefore, even though this particular one happened to grow on Shabbos, you still don't have a heter for it. Now, the Gemara says, Uraminu, I have a contradiction to that. We learned at the end of Eruvin, Choschin Yabelas Mamikdash, you're allowed to remove a wart from an animal in the Bes Mikdash on Shabbos, because Ein Shavus Mamikdash, Ava Loiba Medina, but not anywhere else in the country. The imbikli kan v'kan also. But if you're doing it by hand, if you're doing it with a keli, if you're doing it with a knife, then either way it's also. So how do you? So here we're saying you can't remove the wart, and there we're saying you could, because they already it's an issur d'oraisa to do it with a knife. But that's what we have to figure out. So Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yosi, Baruch Hanina. Now Rashi points out, according to Rabbi Eliezer in our Mishnah, who says machshire mitzvah or doicha Shabbos, then yes, he would say even malachas d'oraisa. We learned in Shabbos, for example, that Rabbi Eliezer would allow you to carry a knife through Rosh Hashanah Rabbim for the Mila, or even to make a knife on Shabbos if you need. But the Gemara doesn't want to say over here that the Mishnah in Eruvin could be according to Rabbi Eliezer, and our Mishnah would be according to the Chachamim. That's not going to work, because yeah, according to Rabbi Eliezer, you should be allowed with a knife. So if the Mishnah there was telling us with a knife you can't, then obviously that has to be according to the Chachamim. So even the Chachamim themselves are sometimes allowing you to remove a wart and sometimes not. So what's the distinction? So Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yosi ben Chanina. So Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yosi ben Chanina argue how to reconcile the two Mishnayos. Chad Oma Aidi V'Aidi B'Yad. One says that in both Mishnayos, both here and in Eruvin, it's talking about removing it by hand. But Habalacha Habayavesha. But our Mishnah is talking about where it's a moist, where it's a moist wart, a fresh wart, which is therefore it's considered part of the skin. So to remove it would be an issu d'rabbanon. The one in Eruvin is talking about a dry one where there's not even a shavus. There's not even an issu d'rabbanon. So therefore, fine. In the Medina, we still don't want you to do it, because once you do a dry one, you might come to do a moist one as well. But in the Bes Mikdash, we were not gozer on shavus, then we're not worried about that. V'chad Omer, the other one says Aidi v'Aidi Balacha. Both of them are talking about a fresh one. V'loikasha Habayad Habakli. The difference is the Mishnah in Eruvin over there is telling you that you can take it off by hand. Our Mishnah is telling you you can't take it off the kli, which therefore exactly matches what it says over there. In b'kli kan v'kan also. So the Gemara says, now why do we have two different explanations? Ulamanda Omer Habayad Habakli. My time like Omer Aidi v'Aidi B'Yad V'loikasha Habalacha Habayavesha. With the Manda Omer who explains that we're talking about by hand versus a keli. Why doesn't he like the explanation that there we're talking about a dry one and here we're talking about a fresh one? The answer is Amalach, because I'll answer you, Yevesha Mifrach Pricha. A dry one is just going to crumble away anyway. You can't really call that cutting away. So even if you did it with a keli, it would be mutter, because it's dry anyway. It's not really part of the skin anymore. So obviously, therefore, if the Mishnah there in Eruvin is telling us that you can't do it with a keli, it can't be talking about a dry one. So they're the only thing that's left. Therefore, is to say that we're talking about a fresh one in both cases, and there it's saying you can remove it by hand in the Bes Mikdash, because Ein Shavus B'Mikdash, whereas here we're talking about doing it with a keli, and that would be a malacha d'oraisa, and you can't do that. Okay, Ulamanda Omar, Aidi V'Aidi B'Yad, V'Lakasha Habalacha Habayavesha. Okay, the other Manda Omar, who says both of them are talking about by hand, and one's talking about a fresh one, and the other's talking about a dry one. My time, Omar, Aidi V'Aidi B'Lacha, V'Lakasha Habayad Abakli. Why doesn't he like the explanation that there we're talking about doing it by hand, and here we're talking about doing it with a knife? So the answer is Amalach, because he'll tell you, what do you mean? Why should it need to mention in our Mishnah anything about doing it with a keli? Kli hakatani hasam. It says right there in the Mishnah in Eruvin, im b'kli kan v'kan osur, that if it was with a keli, in both cases it's osur. So there's no reason for our Mishnah to repeat that. So it must be our Mishnah is telling us a chiddush over the one over there. Namely, over there we were talking about a dry one, and here we're talking about a fresh one, and saying that there's a further issue in it, which we didn't learn about in Eruvin. The idach, so what would the other Manda Amar answer? He would say there is a chiddush in our Mishnah, even if you say it's telling us that you can't use a keli. Ha dekatani kli hacha, the fact that it mentions over here about a keli, plugged to Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, also Ashminen, because it wants to inform us that you should know that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua argue about it. The Mishnah in Eruvin over there doesn't mention anything about that machlokas. So now in our Mishnah, the Tana wants us to know that you should know this, that we're saying that you can't use a knife to cut it off when it's fresh. Rabbi Yeshua would say that. Or not when it's fresh. Well, yeah, that he would say that, yeah, both of them are talking about where it's fresh. One's by hand, one's with a keli. Why is our Mishnah repeating the fact that you can't do it with a keli, even though it already said it in Eidovin? Because from the Mishnah in Eidovin, we wouldn't know that Rabbi Eliezer disagrees. That the Tana of our Mishnah wanted you to know that Rabbi Eliezer disagrees and says even a fresh one and even with a keli, you could do on Shabbos, because he says that Machshira Mitzvah are Doicha Shabbos. Okay. The Rambam paskens like the second opinion. So it means, in other words, that even in the Bais Mikdash you can't cut it off with a keli. On the other hand, a dry one you could crumble off, and there's not a problem. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Omer Rabbi Eliezer, Umayim Shchita v'chola. So Rabbi Eliezer had argued again that Machshirei Mitzvah are Doicha Shabbos. So Rabbi Eliezer had argued all those things that you said in the Mishnah that you're not allowed to do, the carrying it, the bringing it from outside the Tchum, etc. He says you are allowed to, and he makes a Kavachoymer. He says if even Shchita, which is a Malacha Daraisa, we're still doing on Shabbos, how much more so these things which are only Dirabbanon? Well, no. Bringing it from outside the Tchum, for example, is not in the Mikdash. It's bringing it to the Mikdash. Right. But in other words, Rabbi Eliezer is saying, this that you're saying that the Rabbanans are also to make the Korban Pesach ready to bring, I would say that no. And in fact, I have a Kal v'Chomer that if we're allowed to even shecht it, how much more so we should be allowed to do these things, the Rabbanan. So then in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yeshua argues and says, no, one second, what about on Yom Tov? You're allowed to do certain malachas d'arais on Yom Tov, malachas eichel nefesh, but you're still not allowed to do d'rabbanans. And Rabbi Eliezer says to Rabbi Yeshua, what kind of a comparison is that? There you're talking about for a dvar reshus, you're talking about for something optional, to eat a Yom Tov meal, which is not a requirement. Here we're talking about a mitzvah to bring, here we're talking about a requirement to bring the Korban Pesach, so it's not the same thing at all. So the Gemara continues. So now, what would Rabbi Yeshua answer to that? The answer is, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yeshua, the time may, Rabbi Yeshua would say, it's saying that I'm going according to my own svara, Dama Simchas Yom Tov Nami Mitzvah. He says, Simchas Yom Tov is also a mitzvah. So therefore, it's a good comparison. You're allowing Malachas Daraisa for Simchas Yom Tov, but you're not allowing certain Dirabbanans. The same thing when it comes to the mitzvah of the Korban Pesach, same idea. And again, the rule would be that it depends whether it's something that could have been done before Yom Tov or not. When we learn Masechta Beitzah, Be'ez Hashem, for a few months from now, we're going to talk about those kinds of details. What kinds of malachas, daraisa or darabanan, are you allowed to do on Yom Tov because you couldn't have done them before Yom Tov, or at least not without it deteriorating, versus which ones you have to have done before Yom Tov, and if you didn't, then tough luck. Okay, the Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Ein loy la'odem b'yomtev, ela oy oichel v'shoisa, oy yoshe v'shoina. On Yom Tov, there's only one of two choices. Either you eat and drink the whole day, or you sit and learn the whole day. As we're going to explain in a second why he says that. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, chalkeu. Rabbi Yeshua says, no, you divide up the day. Half of it for eating and drinking and half of it for the Beis Medrash. Whether it means literally half, 50%, or whether it just means part for one or part from the other, you have different posts can talk about that. Anyway, V'omer Rabbi Yechanan, so Rabbi Yechanan says, Ushneim Mikra Echad Doshu, both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua are getting their shittis from the same posse. Namely, you have like this, actually two different psukim. One posuk says about Shvi Shal Pesach that it should be an atzeres, a holding back for Hashem, which means that the day should be devoted completely to Hashem, to davening and learning. A different posuk about Shmini Atzeres says that it should be an atzeres for you, implying that it should be for your enjoyment, for eating and drinking. Now, okay, there are two different Yom Tovim, but still, there's no reason to assume that Shvi Shal Pesach and Shmini Atzeres should have different rules. They're both Yom Tovim. So therefore, Rabbi Eliezer Sava, so Rabbi Eliezer says that what it is the Psukim are giving you a choice. Oy kulo lachem, oy kulo lachem. It's one or the other. Either it's completely for Hashem or completely lachem. So either you can follow either one Pasuk or the other. Rabbi Yeshua Sava, Rabbi Yeshua says you have to go. You have to put together both psukim. So therefore, okay, you divide it. Chetzi l'Hashem, chetzi l'Hashem. So half of it is for Hashem, for davening and learning, and half of it is l'Hashem. Okay, so the point is, in other words, so according to Rabbi Eliezer, Simchas Yom Tov, the eating of a meal on Yom Tov, is Rishus. It's not required. So therefore, he can be arguing against Rabbi Yeshua in the Mishnah that you're bringing a proof from the halachas of Yom Tov, but there it's for Rishus. Here we're talking about for the Korban Pesach, which is a mitzvah. And Rabbi Yeshua will counter that, no, according to me, as a matter of fact, Simchas Yom Tov is a chayva. You are obligated in it for half the day, just like you're obligated in the Korban Pesach. So therefore, it's a good comparison. Okay. So the Gemara... So he says that Lashem applies to both of them and Lachem applies to both of them. You have to have half of one, half of the other. Yeah. So the Gemara says Abam Simen. The Simen over here is one way of understanding is that the Mem should actually be a Samach, and then it refers to the names of the Amoraim we're going to quote: Reb Elazar, the Ayin of Elazar, the Beis of Rabba, and the Samach of Rabbi Yosef that we're going to quote. The other possibility is that it's key letters from the names of the Yom Tovim that we're going to talk about: Atzeres, which is Shavuos, Shabbos, the Beis of Shabbos, and the Mem of Purim. So it's a simon for the Yom Tovim or for the names of the Amoraim. Anyway, Amar Rabbi Elazar. So Rabbi Elazar says, "Hakol moedim ba'atzeres to be in a nami lachem." Everybody agrees when it comes to Shavuos. Even Rabbi Eliezer would agree that you do need lachem. That you do need lachem on it. That you do need to have part of the day set aside for eating and drinking. Meaning, Rashi says, the reason is because that was the day we received the Torah. You have to be besimcha on that day with eating and drinking in order to demonstrate that you appreciate the fact that we received the Torah. You shouldn't look at it, oh, you know, such a burden, we received it, and I'm not going to bother celebrating it. No, you definitely have to celebrate it. My time, because the day that the Torah was given, and therefore you have to demonstrate that you're happy with that by eating and drinking and feasting. Which, by the way, Tosfos points out, in that case, then we're back to, so what's Rabbi Eliezer slugging up Rabbi Yeshua's proof in the Mishnah? So he says, okay, because maybe we could say, since Rabbi Eliezer, even Rabbi Eliezer would say that, fine, you have to on Shavuos, but it's not based on a posik, it's only based on Svara, so it's a weaker kind of thing. It's maybe only Drabbanan that you need to. Maybe Doraisi you wouldn't be required to. Okay. Amar Rabba, Hakol Moedim B'Shabbos to be in Nami Lachem. Rabba says, everybody agrees when it comes to Shabbos that you need also Lachem. You can't spend the whole day learning. My time of a Karosel Shabbos owning, because the Pasuk says you should call Shabbos a delight, and that means that you have to delight in Shabbos by eating good food. Amar Rabbi Yosef, Hakol Moedim B'Purim to be in Nami Lachem. And Rabbi Yosef says, everybody agrees by Purim that we also require Lachem. My time, you may mishtav a simcha ksivbe, because after all, it says by it that they have to be days, the days of Purim, Yudalan and Tesvav, respectively, have to be days of feasting and simcha, so therefore you have to actually eat. No, that's what we're saying. That mishta means eating. So therefore, on Purim, you definitely need lachem. Even Rabbi Eliezer, who's saying that a Yom Tov could be only lachem, he agrees that on Purim, you have to have lachem in there. Yeah. This that we're saying, by the way, so for Shabbos and for Shabbos and for Purim, we're bringing psukim. For Shavuos, we're not bringing a posik. We're just saying misvara, that it's Yom Shenit Nebo Torah. There's a couple of sichas where the Rebbe talks about the deeper idea behind it. Given that the Torah was given down here, lamata me'asara tfachim, to neshamas in bodies, therefore we have to demonstrate on the day. It's not just like Rashi is saying over here, we have to demonstrate that we're happy with receiving the Torah. It's also the whole point of the Torah is to be mevarer of the world. Therefore, even Rabbi Eliezer would agree that we have to eat on that day in order to be mevarer, in order to be mevarer of the world. Okay, so the Gemara continues. In this connection, about we're saying that there are these days when you're not allowed, when you have to dafka eat. So he would fast throughout the entire year, and we'll talk about in a second what that means. With the exception of Shavuos, as we just said, you have to eat on Shavuos, or Puya and Purim, same thing. And the third one that he made an exception was Umala Yom Kippur. The third one he made an exception was Erev Yom Kippur. Now, what do we mean by this? So you have a lot of different opinions among the Rishonim. What's going on over here? The major question that we have is, we're saying that he fasted throughout the whole year. So does that mean he fasted on Shabbos? We just said Shabbos, you have to eat as well. So there's a lot of different explanations. One explanation is we don't mean that he fasted on Shabbos. We mean that the Baal Amor starts talking about that you have various kinds of fasts, he says. A person is fasting because of something sad, like, for example, the fast that we have Shavuos B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av and the rest of that group. Sometimes you have fasts where a person is fasting partially because he forgot to eat. He's too busy learning or working or whatever and forgot to eat. And then you have fasts that a person is doing for Tshuva. So he distinguishes, and within that you also have, for example, you have the kind of fast that a person fasts, let's say, for a tinus cholam or something. So he says you could maybe have distinctions over here when we're saying that ma brei deravina would fast throughout the year. What it means is certain of these kinds of fasts, yes, he would fast even on Shabbos. Because, for example, a tinus cholam, the halacha is you fast it even on Shabbos. The Ravid disagrees with certain parts of what the Baal HaMor is saying. He says what it means is not that he's fasting throughout the year. It means he had a regular practice of fasting Monday and Thursday. So Shabbos obviously is not in the picture anyway. But what it means is, in other words, in advance, he would say, if any of these 3 days that we're listing comes out on Monday or Thursday, then I'll skip my fast that time, because if it's Shavuos, you have to eat Shavuos. If it's Purim, you have to eat Purim, etc. Any other days, any other Yom Tovim, he wouldn't exempt from that. And therefore, he would fast. Part of the question is also, it comes out, part of the argument is the halacha in fact like Rabbi Eliezer, that you're allowed to have kulei lashem on the various Yom Tovim, or is the halacha like Rabbi Yeshua that you always have to have chetzi lashem v'chetzi lachem? So that also affects this question. And there's also, on top of that, you know, we said Rabbah had said you're not allowed to fast on Shabbos. My brother Ravina, being an Amora, could disagree with that. So you have a few different permutations of what's going on here exactly. Anyway, but we do know that he made these three are exceptions: Shavuos, Purim, and Erev Yom Kippur. So Atzeres, again, the reason is because Yom Shenitna by Torah, because we just said it's the day the Torah was given, and therefore you have to celebrate with food and drink to show that we're happy to have received the Torah and to bring down and then to be Mevarer. Puria, you may mishtav a simcha ksiv. As far as Purim, again, we said it's because you may mishtav a simcha, so therefore we have to eat on it. And Mala, Yom Kippur, why is it that he wouldn't fast on Erev Yom Kippur? The reason is the Toni Chir Barav Midifti, because Chir Barav Midifti Torah Braisa. The Pasuk says, V'inissim es nafshei seichem b'sisha l'chodesh, you should afflict your souls, meaning that you should fast on the ninth of the month. So what do you mean? V'chi b'sisha hei mesanim, you don't fast on the ninth of Tishrei. V'alei ba'asiri mesanim, if the tenth is Yom Kippur. Ella, loy malach, comes to tell you, kol ha'oichel b'shoitse b'tisha boi, if a person eats and drinks on the ninth day of Tishrei, Mala Olabakosiv Kila Masana, Chiva City, then the Pasuk counts it for him, gives him a schus as if he had fasted on the ninth and the tenth. So in other words, we see it's very important to eat on Erev Yom Kippur, and therefore so even Ma'abrei D'Ravina wouldn't fast on that day. Again, whether he's fasting every day, whether he's fasting a Tainas Cholam, whether he's fasting Mondays and Thursdays, whatever it is, he wouldn't do that on Erev Yom Kippur. Rashi, by the way, points out, now there is a different day that's mentioned in Yuma and in other places in Shas that says that actually we learn a different thing from this Vesisha L'Chodesh Ba'erev. We learn that you can't start the fasting and the Inurim of Yom Kippur exactly when Yom Kippur begins. You have to have Tosfos Yom Kippur. You have to start a little bit early while it's still the ninth. So Rashi says that actually, Rashi says that actually not, I mean, you know, there is such a thing, but you could actually learn that from a different pasuk. So therefore you have this word betisha available over here to teach us about the importance of eating on the ninth. So the point is that's why Ma'abrei D'Ravina would eat on that day. Okay. Continuing on the topic of celebrating Shavuos, the Gemara says, Rav Yosef, b'yoma da'atzarta omar, on Shavuos, Rav Yosef would say, Avdil egla tilsa, make for me an egla tilsa, a third calf, which over here Rashi explains it means it was born third. In different other places, Rashi talks about different other possibilities, that it means it's one third of its growth, etc., etc. The point is, it was a very good quality animal. Especially to celebrate Shavuos. In fact, Marashah points out there's a further thing. Besides the fact that we're saying it's very good quality meat, it also represents all the threes that have to do with Matan Torah that the Gemara mentions in Shavuos. Moshe is the third child in his family. The Torah is composed of three parts, Torah, Nevi'im, Uksuvim. The Jewish people are composed of three parts. It was given on the third day, etc., etc. So therefore, an Egla Tilsa also symbolizes that. And Omar, he says, after all, I have to celebrate Shavuos. Eloi Hayyom de Kogorim, if it weren't for this day that caused this to happen, meaning Rashi says that I learned Torah and I became greater, Kama Yosef, Ika B'Shuka, think of how many other people named Yosef there are in the marketplace, so I wouldn't be any more special than them, were it not for the fact that the Torah was given on that day and I learned Torah and become greater with that. There's a couple of sichas where the Rebbe analyzes this. In one, the Rebbe talks about the idea. Now, we know famously there was the idea that before Matan Torah, they could learn Torah and keep mitzvahs as well. But their Torah and their mitzvahs weren't mashpia on the world. El yonim lo yod lamata, tachtonim lo yad lamayla, that there was a disconnect between heaven and earth. And only by Matan Torah was that taken away. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef is saying, even before Matan Torah, there would have been the concept of Yosef of adding Kedusha in the world. But the world would be like a shuk, the world would be like a marketplace where there's no ability to actually bring Kedusha into it. Now that the Torah was taken away, then instead I'm able to accomplish the Hayyom to Kagorim. This day makes it possible now. It brings it about that now we're able to be poil on the world and on ourselves. That as Rashi says, I became greater, and therefore we have to celebrate that day. That now the world is not just a shuk anymore. Now we're able to infuse it with Kedusha. And then if it goes on to explain in the Sikha over there why Dafka Rabbi Yosef is the one who came up with this. It has to do with the fact that Rabbi Yosef was blind, and there's a question whether he's chayev in all the mitzvahs or not. It also has to do with the fact that Rabbi Yosef is Sinai, the expert in many different areas of Torah. And a long, long Sikha over there in Chelek Tesayin, where the Rebbe analyzes in detail why Rabbi Yosef is the one who came up with this Chiddush. And a different Sikha later on in Memtes, that I've also analyzed in a different way, that what Rabbi Yosef is saying is that this is the time when it made it possible to connect the world to Elikus. Where again, the idea is before Matan Torah, you had that disconnection. And now you're able to connect the world to Elikus. So therefore, we have to celebrate it. Similarly, Rav Sheshes, Kol Tlosin Yomin Mahadur LeTalmudei, Rav Sheshes would review all of his learning every 30 days, the Tully, and then he would lean the Koi be Ibra the Dasha. He would stand there leaning against the hinge of the door, or actually Ibra the Dasha actually is not the hinge, it's the bolt of the door. So he's standing there by the door, leaning against it. The Omar, and he would say, Chadoi nafshoi, Chadoi nafshoi, be happy, my neshama, be happy, my neshama, loch karoi, loch tanoi. It's for you that I learned Tanakh, and for you that I learned Mishnayos and Braises. I accomplished for you so much. Now why is he addressing his neshama that way? So again, there's a lot of different points. The Alter Rebbe first of all mentions in Tanya that when a person learns Torah in Perek Lamed Zayin, the Alter Rebbe talks about when a person learns Torah, he brings down a tremendous level of elikus to his neshama, much higher than he does through mitzvahs, and therefore Rav Sheshes is saying over here that my neshama should be happy. Not only I do mitzvahs, but I bring down even the greater gilui elikus that's brought down by learning Torah to my neshama. There's the idea that's brought in a number of places in Chassidus that, the idea is a person has to learn Torah b'simcha, so therefore he's mentioning the fact that my neshama should be happy that I'm learning Torah, because happiness is an essential thing in order to learn and absorb Torah. There's also the Rebbe brings in a letter someplace that Rav Sheshes is actually a Gilgal of Bava ben Buta. In fact, you have Sheshes is the Atbash of Bava. Beis becomes Shin and Aleph becomes Tav. So Bava becomes Sheshes. And they actually had this in common. They were both blind. But the point is, therefore, now Bava ben Buta, being a tzaddik, he accomplished almost everything he needed to in this world. His neshama needed a little bit more, so therefore it was sent down again in Rav Sheshes. So therefore, the idea is, like Rav Sheshes' neshama is gaining from him being in the world a second time. His body is not really gaining much from it. When it comes to Ches HaMesim, which body is the neshama going to be more associated with? Bava ben Buta's body from a few hundred years earlier. So therefore, Rav Sheshes is saying to my neshama, be happy. In other words, fine, body, you don't have much what to be happy about because we're not here in the world primarily for you. But the neshama is accomplishing great things and you can be happy about it. Because after all, because the neshama accomplished, he was mevarer, the body of Bava ben Buta, so therefore the neshama. I mean, you have fine. Rav Sheshes is obviously not. Rav Sheshes obviously is going to have tchias amesim as well. But the main neshama over there was going to be associated with Bava ben Buta, who it belonged to originally. When you have a regular person who comes back in a gilgul, where maybe the first time around they completely messed up and the neshama wasn't mevarer their body at all. So then fine, a major part of the neshama can be more in the second body, and the second body accomplish it, gains from the fact that it has this neshama in it. Because now the person is doing mitzvahs with it. But in the case of Bava ben Buta and of Sheshes, where he already accomplished so much, there's very little that of Sheshes still has to finish up. So therefore the gain is more for the original, is more for the neshama rather than for the new body. So therefore he's saying, Chadori nafshoi, my neshama be happy. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Any, is that so? You're saying that a person learns Talmud Torah and the gain is only for himself? If it weren't for the Torah, the heaven and earth wouldn't continue to exist. If it weren't for my covenant by day and by night, which means the Torah, which is learned by day and by night, I wouldn't have set up the laws of heaven and earth. So what is Rav Shesha saying? My neshama, be happy that you're learning Torah. What do you mean his neshama? It benefits the whole world. The answer is fine, but originally, when a person starts out, he's doing it for his own benefit. Now, not to be makabel pras, fine, I'll tell you kavodim, I'm a shamash nesedav, I'm an as the kavod pras, but he's first focusing on the gili alakus that he gets for his neshama. Afterwards, he thinks about the effect that it has on the world at large. So therefore, Rav Sheshes is saying the same thing, that first, let's focus on the great advantage that learning Torah gives to my neshama, the gili that it brings to it. Afterwards, we can talk about what it accomplishes for the world as a whole. Okay. So we digressed from this because we were talking about Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua about the argument about whether Simchas Yom Tov is a mitzvah or a shuas. So that led us into this piece of Agadah. So tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, we'll continue with the analysis of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua's opinions in the Mishnah and what comes of that. What comes of that in terms of whether you're able to do these things that are also Dirabanan in order to bring the Korban Pesach or not. That's what we're holding on Rav Ashi.